Welcome to Dishing Daycare Dirt. I'm Shelley Cooper, owner of Lifelong Learners Child Development Centers in Downers Grove. We have a mission to ensure all children know they matter. We create experiences, have a blast while teaching, and show these kids love day in and day out. This podcast was created to be a resource for early childhood education teachers, but really, it's for anyone who interacts with young children. I'm so happy you pushed play today, so let's do this. Today on Dishing Daycare Dirt, you will meet Casey Kraft Cortez. She's an infant toddler specialist with the YWCA and has been for 10 years. She's also a soon-to-be mom. She has helped lifelong learners so many times in the past with things like room setup, teacher-child interactions, trainings, and just relationships in general. Her program is an amazing free resource for all centers and teachers. I encourage everyone to visit the YWCA website link in the show notes. It will not disappoint. So let's listen in to all the wisdom that Casey brings to the table. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm so good.
Good, I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you for coming.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
How's your day going?
Good. Just got back from observation and just, it's picking back up again and more of a reason why we need what you're doing, these podcasts, why we need the support, because it's tough out there right now.
I know. It is. It really is. Okay. All right. So the beginning of like our Zoom, I just will cut out, but then I'll introduce you and then we'll just kind of talk from there. Did you get the outline that I sent?
Oh my gosh, probably not. Shoot.
That's okay. You know, that's okay. You don't need it. It just has questions on there. I always open the show and close the show with the same kind of questions, just like kind of fun, lighthearted questions. So I just like to tell you in advance so you have time to think about it if you want, but these are questions that you can answer on the fly. It's just about you. So it's
okay.
Not a big deal at all. And then the meat of the podcast is basically just what you, your knowledge, you know, what you want to present, like what you can bring to the teachers. So it's just really a conversation, honestly. It's nothing big.
Nothing to be nervous about. Okay.
No. All right. Okay. So today on Dishing Daycare Dirt, we have Casey Kraft Cortez. I always forget the end of your name because I've known you before that end was there. So I always say Casey Kraft.
Yep.
But she's an infant toddler specialist at the YWCA. So she's going to bring us all kinds of information today. But we always open the podcast in the same way. So we're going to ask you a few personal questions. So normally I would ask what age you teach or what age you interact with, but you're not a teacher. So why don't you tell us what age group that you deal with the most?
Yes, absolutely. So as the infant toddler specialist, I work mainly with the 0 to 3 age group, but I work with all ages of preschool, early childhood, things like that. So 0 to 5, I'm comfortable with. It's really funny as we did a training recently for the DuPage ROE, and I had 7th grade teachers in my training. And I was like, oh, this is very different from what I'm used to. So it was really interesting.
Yeah. I feel like some of the principles that we use could be applied to 7th graders.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And some of the behaviors we were hearing, I was like, this is absolutely what we see in preschool. And now it's good to know that we're seeing it in 7th grade as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So I think I mentioned that you work for the YWCA. How long have you been in the early childhood field?
I've been with the Y for almost 10 years. And then prior to that, I was teaching in a childcare setting, infant toddler classroom. I've probably been in this field. Honestly, I started in college. I was 19 years old. Wow. I came back from spring break. I needed some money and the local childcare center was hiring. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened my degree was in child development. And so I was like, okay, I'll give it a whirl. I'll see how it goes.
Wow. That's awesome. So I've known you for at least 5 years because Casey actually came to my house when I had in-home daycare. I bought a new house and she came and set it up. So that's kind of my history with, you know, with you.
that was like so helpful. So I think you've just kind of like, I'm so glad that we reconnected because like I need the help at my daycare center. So it's amazing. All right. So, well, you told us how you ended up in the field, which I love to hear because I really love working with the students at the College of DuPage or any college student, but I love it. And I just feel like we need those young people just fresh out of college coming into the field because the knowledge that they bring is amazing because it's changed so much from, you know, the past 20 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, what's really interesting is we work very closely with TCD, which is out in Addison. And so every year up until COVID, we did a seventh grade career fair and I was presenting on this field for seventh graders. And so as you're saying, you know, college students, I'm thinking when can we start and really when is too early to start introducing this field to potential candidates? You know, this workforce needs it so badly right now.
I feel like seventh grade is actually the perfect age because aren't they starting to babysit and stuff at that time, or maybe eighth grade? Like, that's a perfect time. That's awesome. All right. So what keeps you in the field?
I love what I do. I really love it. So, you know, we were chatting a little bit before we started and, I was mentioning how I just got back from an observation and it's just, the need is real. The need is out there for our children, for our teachers. I think I experienced a lot of like the COVID burnout. I've been at home for over 2 years, finally back in the field. And I just needed that, like refresher, revival of why I do what I do. It's just a passion to change the trajectory of kids' lives. And really, I don't work so much with like one-to-one with children. It's the teachers, you know, it's adults. It's your peers that you're like, how can I support you? How can we work together and partner? And I think very much a relationships person. So I think that that keeps me going.
Yeah.
Fills me up.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you think about the lives that you're touching, when you're working with a child, you're touching those lives, you're touching that child's life. But when you're working with a teacher, every teacher touches hundreds of kids' lives. So you have the potential to 10 times the lives that you're touching as far as kids, when you're dealing with teachers. That's kind of how I look at what I do. I loved doing in-home daycare. I loved being in the classroom, but I felt like if I really wanted to make a difference, I needed to inspire teachers and I needed to touch more kids' lives, open a center. And that was how I was going to reach more kids. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, both things are super important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, so I honestly, you have so much knowledge. I mean, there are so many topics that you could touch on, but, I want to give that to you, you know, because you're out in the field, you see where the need is the most, and I want to bring information that the teachers need the most. So I'm going to let you kind of speak on what you think teachers need to hear and to get better.
Absolutely. Where do we begin? So let's begin with, as I mentioned, being very relationship-based, like that's the foundation. And so being back out in this field and we're kind of going through this COVID pandemic, what do you want to call it? It's like the new normal, but it's, you know, everyone's still pretty tired of hearing about it. We're still not sure what's happening. And so like this pandemic recovery of, okay, now what? Now what do we do? So I would say for starters, the relationship piece, it's kind of going back to basics. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of work recently around how do we go back to just enjoying the children in our classrooms or our learning environments, and what brings you joy as a teacher, you know? And I was just at an observation today and it was a really tough situation with the little girl. And the teacher said, I just want to share though, that when she's not like this, she's curious, she's kind, she has empathy, she's sweet, she has, you know, really great manners. Mm-hmm. And that right there, that little piece, sometimes, you know, we refer to as like moments of effectiveness.
Yeah.
Like that is your moment of effectiveness. You know how this child, quote unquote, like usually is, right?
Right.
She's having a day today.
Mm-hmm.
you don't get there without knowing how to build relationships with children.
Right.
So that's a lot of what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah. I think that, I don't know why it is, but there's a lot of focus on tasks in the classroom. And I think that teachers are forgetting that the number one priority is to be on the floor, to play with the kids. Yes, we have to change their diapers. Yes, we have to make sure that they're fed, but that's secondary. You know, I mean, these kids need to bond. They need someone that they can count on when they need to help regulate themselves and do things like that. And just remembering that in those moments that you're describing, like when they're not at their best, they don't want to be like that. You know, they need help. That's communication. Right. They're asking you to help them. Yeah. So yeah, I love that. Absolutely. I think in a relationship, I feel like can solve so many problems too. Yes. So many behavior problems, right?
Yes. And I think if we become more aware of how reactive we are to children right now, we're just in a really reactive society and state. And that's my goal as a coach, is to say, you know, how often today did you feel like you spoke at the children or you were very reactive to them versus proactive? How often, you know, I teach on the program for infant toddler caregivers and pyramid model, which is supporting children's social emotional competence. Both of these frameworks really have changed lives, I believe. And so it's all about implementation of these frameworks, of the knowledge that teachers get when they take these trainings. It's very much a systems process of where do I start and how do I make these changes so that I don't see behaviors continuing. So the first part of that is your relationships. How are you depositing with young children? How are you giving them that encouragement when they're not dysregulated, right? And understanding how they like to be loved. And I'm a big fan of like love languages, right? So it works. It works in your relationships and it works with the children that you're caring for as well.
Yeah, I agree. I heard this. I did not make this analogy up. I heard it somewhere. I don't remember where, but if you compare relationships to a bank account, you know, if you put deposit after deposit after deposit in, when you have to make a withdrawal, it's not that big of a deal. So if you're giving them what they need time after time after time, when you have to make a correction or when you have to, you know, kind of intervene in a situation, it's not that big of a deal to them because you have this strong relationship with them.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right.
You know, most of the time kids want to please you. So if you have a relationship, you can kind of talk them into anything, you know?
Yeah, I think you're so right. So that's the analogy that we use with deposits and withdrawals. How often are you demanding of a child to do something? And it's not even a negative thing to withdraw. It's, you know, asking children questions, giving them a two-step direction, things that we want them to learn, the life skills. But like you said, the more you deposit within them, the more that it doesn't take away so much to where they're feeling depleted at the end of the day. Right. I really like that analogy. I think it works. And really what we as, you know, Accelerate Illinois, the pyramid model, PITC, all these different areas of like high quality, like frameworks of change, things like that. We kind of look at how teachers are in the sense of, are they nurturing, consistent, and responsive? And that's literally all I look at when I'm out there. When I'm doing observations, are you nurturing? Are you consistently there and consistently implementing things like routines, transitions, your schedules? And are you responding in a timely manner and in a positive way? And we're not going to meet the needs right away of children. They're very emotional, but at least we're showing them every day we show up and we're consistent, responsive, and nurturing.
Right.
And I think that's the foundation.
Yeah. I love that. I think it's a message that really needs to be implemented, reminded. It's hard because right now with the way staffing is, we're getting a lot of people that want to be teachers, but don't have any experience. And so it's kind of like starting from square one. You have to go back to those basic things because interactions are natural. But interactions with children, you have to have some sort of knowledge on how to do that. I mean, in order to be effective, I mean, obviously anybody can interact, but like you said, you got to be responsive. You have to be consistent. You have to be there, present, you know. That takes work. That's not something that is always natural to somebody who's never worked in the field. So we're really trying to find ways to support, you know, people that want to be in this field that have zero experience.
Absolutely. And I think if you look at the lens of like reflecting as well, so how often do we take that reflective lens and just kind of look within? And that is something that it's not really spoken about in this field, right? We're doing so many things. Like you said, we're doing routine care. We've got our tasks that we have to do. We have our schedule, our curriculum, our lesson plans. And I'm like, okay, if you're a teacher coming into this field and maybe you've never really taught a certain age group or this age group, and you're just bringing it back from what you remember in school, what are you remembering? And it's probably sit at a desk. It's very controlling. It's do as I say.
Yeah.
Yes. Not fun. And I took a course with this instructor a while ago, and it was really all about how we're reflecting on our work and why we do what we do. And he had said something that stuck with me. And he was like, I'm not going to generalize it and say all teachers are in this field for this reason, but I will say most teachers, especially two-year-old teachers, are super controlling. And it's either because that's how we grew up, like understanding what like teacher means. And we're in this like really awkward stage where the children are kind of independent, but they're still dependent on you.
Yeah.
And we're like, we have to get them ready for preschool. So we have to just continuously come at them with like teacher initiated activities.
Yeah.
And he was like, I guarantee you, if you ask teachers, he's like, again, I'm not speaking about everybody, but why you do what they do. And it's either some sort of control, like we like things in order or organization, or we're lacking something that we had or didn't have as a child. And so we want to make sure our children have, you know, a different experience. And I see a lot of that in my teachers, and I try to get them to reflect on that. Yeah. The why.
You know, I want to give a shout out to my two-year-old teacher, honestly, because one of the things I love about her is that she lets the kids be kids. I think that a lot of new teachers are very paranoid that if somebody comes, like if I walk into the room and their room appears like quote unquote out of control, that's a bad thing. But it doesn't have, like kids can be free to do what they're feeling at the moment. And our two-year-old teacher does that very, very well. If a child wants to do something that she doesn't want them to do, or she'll talk with them, she'll say, so why do you want to do that? You know, do you think it's, let's try it. We'll try it together, or just talking them through things. And, you know, sometimes when you go in, you got, you know, little kids running everywhere or doing different things, and it may look chaotic, but all those kids have a purpose at that moment. They're exploring something, and she's letting them be free to do that. And yes, sometimes there's toys all over the floor, but you know what? At least they're playing with the toys, and she's on the floor with them playing and just really teaching them. And, she's amazing. She's also getting her master's degree in early childhood right now. So she brings so much knowledge about those kinds of things too.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give her a little shout out.
Absolutely. I love it. And that just speaks to also the leadership of you as well. And the other directors that work at your childcare, you know, being a coach and seeing the stress on teachers' faces of, oh my gosh, the room is a mess, or it's so out of control. And what we know is that when we get out of control or dysregulated, just like children, we need to find something we can control. And so I see that a lot in these younger classrooms of there's toys everywhere. So now I have to be very reactive to my children because I have to like kind of gain some of this control back.
Right.
And it's totally normal. And I love that you say that because it speaks to your leadership of being able to say, they're exploring with all their senses. This is a totally appropriate thing that they're doing.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things I say in my tour is like, if you want your child to come home clean every day, this is a place for you, because we let them dig in the dirt. They're going to have dirt under their fingernails. We let them, they might get paint on their clothes. They might come home with mud on their shirt, but it's because they're doing what they should do as a child. You know, they're exploring. Yeah. You know, I think one of the most profound things that anyone ever taught me was really when there's a problem, your first step is to look in the mirror. If you're describing a child as a problem, it's probably not the child. I mean, it's probably something that I could do differently, or something that we could make, maybe change the room arrangement, but chances are it's really, they're just communicating something. Their behavior is their form of communication, and there's something that we can do to help them. That's our job.
Beautiful segue into the second part of what I was kind of going to mention about, like, this foundational piece of, like, you know, we can call it high quality. We can call it just success for all children. You know, that first part is the building relationships. And the second part is that learning environment, like you're saying. What am I doing to set up my learning environment for success? And what we know is that typically with behaviors, a lot of children fall within those two categories. They're either lacking some sort of relationship, or their needs aren't being met because we don't have that connection with them, or the learning environment is not set up for success for them. Mm-hmm. And I love this topic, and you know, I love to rearrange classrooms. I love to talk about how, you know, teachers are using their visuals and their display as another teacher in the classroom. Mm-hmm. How are you using your schedules? Are you lesson planning for transitions? They make up like 20% of your day, right? And what we know from the pandemic, there was a lot of research that came out where we now are telling our teachers, you're really doing this trauma-informed care. And so what we know what trauma-informed care means is children need solid, consistent relationships and consistent routines and schedules. Yep. And that falls in that foundational piece right there.
Yeah. I mean, they're little humans. And like, if we think about how would we do without a schedule every day? If I didn't know I was going to do this and this and this, you know, things change in there, but you have kind of an idea how your day is going to go. Can you imagine if you had no idea?
Right.
That's terrible.
Right. And so, like you said, it circles back to then that control. Then it's like we're so out of control because we're in such a dysregulated, you know, I always tell my teachers, and I write this in notes, I say, okay, children should be able to answer these questions. When they're in an activity, what am I doing? How do I know I'm making progress? How do I know when I'm done? And what happens next? And like you said, as an adult, if you don't have that, like, I know after this, I have a meeting at 2 o'clock and then I have to do something else. And of course, things come up and they change. But when these little things come up as adults, we're like, okay, whatever, we'll just regroup. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of teachers think about that. You know, can my children answer these questions during every single activity and routine? Mm-hmm. And routine within routine, and how am I supporting them to make sure that they are successful? And it circles back to that, you know, looking within, like you said, what am I doing? And that's a really hard thing as a coach to say to teachers sometimes, like, well, okay, yes, this child is biting. I totally see it. I saw it today. I'm with you. I'm your advocate, but let's talk about your areas of opportunity of growth and what you're, you know, what's lacking in the classroom.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I actually think that the infant and toddler classrooms get overlooked on all the stuff that you just talked about. I don't think that sometimes teachers think or understand how important that those things like schedules and routines are still very important in a toddler room or in an older infant room. You know, it's just very confusing, I think, for those kids to never know what's next. And I think that teachers often don't realize how many issues can be resolved just by getting a routine and some order in the classroom.
Absolutely. And I go back to the whole like lesson planning for routines or, you know, transitions. They make up so much of those two classrooms, right? Infancy. You know, I think there's this you know, thought that they're just infants, right? They can't respond back, some, you know, but they can, you know, non-verbally, or they can babble. Right. They do know, you know, that who their caregiver is. So we work a lot with like primary caregiving, and how are they making these routines? So like diaper changing, feeding, free play, arrival and departure, making it something that children know what to expect. So like you said, it's, they do get lost in the infant classroom for sure. And think about how intimate those routines need to be for a child who is nonverbal, completely solely relying on you to pick them up. Yeah. If they're non-mobile, move them from area to area, engage with them. And I just think about, like, as I'm ready to have my own baby, you know, just laying on a boppy pillow and not being engaged with something, like, that breaks my heart when I see that. Cause it's such a simple movement for a teacher to go over. Oh, you dropped your rattle. Let me sit down and hold this for you. You're having a hard time grasping it. Right. Yeah. And we tend to see, you know, if the baby's not crying, they're good.
Yeah.
And that's not it at all.
Yeah.
And the toddler classroom, it's totally appropriate to start transferring responsibility onto them. Show me a cleanup chart. Show me the schedule of the day. Right. And I think you're right. Those age groups get forgotten about. And then we work a lot in preschool classrooms where they're like, they should know this already. And it's like, well, you know, they don't. So now we have to, you know, we're constantly playing catch up then.
I agree. Yeah. You know, you mentioned something in the infant classroom that gave me a thought. You know, you talk about just little things like you drop a rattle and when you pick it up, you talk to them. And in an infant classroom, there are so many tasks that need to be done, but those tasks, especially diaper changing, feeding, those are like probably the only times that those kids are going to get one-on-one attention during the day. So when you're changing a diaper, I don't think the focus should be on getting the diaper changed fast. It should be like talking to them, tell them what they're doing. You know, I have my one teacher has something above, like, so the kids look at it and you could talk about, like, you know, that's a tiger or this is red, and just, you know, like make it be a bonding experience, you know, just talk to them and stuff. And I don't think that teachers sometimes they don't realize that because, you know, you're new, you're busy, you know, whatever, but those are such valuable, you know, a valuable 2 minute period that you can make so meaningful.
Yeah. You know, I've really gotten back into this as we're coming out of this pandemic on, again, going back to the why. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm coaching teachers, I'm asking them a lot about, like, what are your priorities in the classroom? Mm-hmm. And what does free play mean to you? And what does social emotional development mean to you? What's important for you at this stage of infancy or toddlers or so on? Mm-hmm. And we dive into that a little bit. The routines matter so much, and it's not meant to be rushed. And I always bring up Judy Jablin. She writes Powerful Interactions. And one of the things she says is to have at least a 5-minute conversation or like a one-on-one interaction, right? Okay. And I think people forget about infants that you can do that. You know, their nonverbal communication makes up a lot of our communication. Mm-hmm. And like you said, routines are probably the only time they would ever get that one-on-one with that child. And so I think understanding what powerful interactions looks like, and also primary caregiving, right? Because I think that can be misused sometimes, misunderstood. Those are the two things I really try to work on with infant teachers is, kind of, what is your priority? What's a priority for this stage of infancy? And then also, you know, talk to me about primary caregiving or interactions or, you know, having music on, right? Sometimes if it's so quiet in the classroom, teachers turn the music up because they're like, okay, let's just kind of buffer the silence a little bit. And I'm like, oh man, this is your opportunity. It all goes back to that building relationships and setting up that learning environment that's super successful for children.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about primary caregiving? Because it's something that I'm actually super passionate about and that I really would like to develop or implement at the centers. I need to get some buy-in on that. You know, I want teachers to be on board. I've had some teachers ask me, you know, well, if we do that, then what about this? And what about this? And so can you just kind of talk about a little bit and like how it would work, say maybe in like, I'm going to use like in my larger center, our largest room in that building is our older infant room. So there's 12 in there with three teachers. So I want to use that room as an example, just because it's the largest room. And I think that primary caregiving would be great in that situation. So just about like a quick general thing on how that would work in that room.
Absolutely. So I think again, like going back to understanding of primary caregiving is it's not that you are assigned a group of children that you only interact with. And I have to be careful because I forget this is a podcast. So, and I serve a lot of centers, but I will say I have seen in programs where, you know, a child is crying, for example, laying on the bobby pillow, crying, and a teacher like walks around the child. And so when that coaching session happens and I say, tell me why, you know, you didn't address the child. Well, that's not my primary child. Mm-hmm. And so we have to understand that primary caregiving is mainly for routines. It's a tool to help us build those relationships. So in this specific case, you might have the three teachers splitting up the 12 children. And what's really important is like this almost like kind of matchmaking, right? So do they understand temperaments? Do they understand that, you know, maybe infant A won't work with teacher A because they have very different temperaments? It's a hard connection for them. Maybe teacher A doesn't see that infant's parents, right? So like she comes in, he or she comes in after infant's dropped off, leaves before their pickup time. So you kind of rule out like that matchmaking. Yeah. And then really all it is just that's your assigned infant to do routine care with. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with play or anything. It's just that arrival, departure, feeding, napping, diapering, right? And then what folks really like too is that it helps kind of break up the load of like doing portfolios or observations mm-hmm. of children as well, which is super critical and also forgotten, I think, sometimes in infant classrooms. Like, where are these children meeting these milestones? Do you know? Have you observed? Have you filled out any kind of assessment? You know, what are you doing to lesson plan? Because mm-hmm. it's such an individualized classroom. This is where these teachers can kind of thrive on saying, well, I know these three are here developmentally because I'm their primary teacher. I spend more time with them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. I love it. And I think like one of the things that I love the most about primary caregiving is I feel like it gives you the opportunity to get to know the child and the family on a deeper level. So instead of dealing with 12 parents, you're going to deal with four, you know, and like you said, something floating there. And like you said, it's not that you're never going to talk to the other parents. It's just that if there's a concern, if there is, you know, something that needs to be addressed, then the parent doesn't have to talk to three different teachers. They can just talk to you. So I just think it just is a more intimate situation.
Absolutely. I mean, if we go back to like consistency, nurturing, and responsive relationships, that really embodies that so much.
So in a situation like, we'll talk about the older infant room, where you've got a kind of a broad age range. So you could have some kids that are in bottles, and then you could also have kids that are closer to the toddler room. So anywhere from, you know, like, I don't know, let's say 9 months to 15 months.
Sure.
So if you've got four of those kids with bottles, would you keep all of those bottle babies with the same teacher, or would you look more at like temperament, which ones they get along with better with the parents, spread those bottles out so that you don't have four babies at once that need to get fed? How would you?
Absolutely. All of the above. Okay. I would take a look. Yep. I would take a look at, again, what infant do you connect with? Mainly the parents, who do you see more, who do you have more connection with the families? Absolutely the bottles. If you have four bottles that you have to get done, it really, I mean, it could be, it just depends on your teachers also, their relationships with each other, right? So if I'm sitting there feeding like three infants, and then another teacher's up doing a diaper, another teacher is also feeding a bottle, then, and you've got no one on the floor. So it's kind of like understanding mm-hmm. the layout of your room. They know their children the best. They know their schedules the best. And that's where I would really recommend you guys talking about like challenges and benefits of primary caregiving. Mm-hmm. And that challenge always comes up for me. It's, well, teacher A has three children who nap at the same time. So then she doesn't do anything all day. And it's like, that is not the point of primary caregiving. And so I would really talk about that can be a challenge. So what, how does it feel then when her three are sleeping and you're changing three diapers? What is your expectation of that teacher then? Mm-hmm. Well, I would like her to be on the floor. Okay. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the zoning of the classroom with this.
Yeah. And that just brings up the importance of how teachers vibe together, like how it's the importance of getting the right teachers in the right classroom, you know, and working together the right way. You know, if you've got two teachers that don't work well together, the classroom is not going to ever flow. So that's just so important to get teachers that really understand each other and, you know, don't even have to say, hey, could you do this? They just, they see that person struggling. They can read the body language and they jump in. That's a beautiful thing to me.
Yeah. And that goes back to that reflection piece too. So if we go back to like, what is your expectation in the classroom? So if you think about what are your priorities in the room, but then what are your expectations of your co-teachers, right? You guys are peers in this classroom. And we dive a lot into that when we're doing coaching, because it's so important. Like you said, if there's a missing link with the teachers, and it's never to make them feel bad, right? We need to know if you have a teacher who has a degree in child development and maybe a teacher who has a degree in, you know, elementary ed, difference. It's a different, right? And so understanding stages and ages of child development, milestones, expectations, things that, again, fall into that foundational piece of those relationships and that learning environment for sure. And I wanted to say something real quick about temperaments too. So we talked about that a couple times. Again, falls in relationships is the hot button children, right? So who is your hot button in the classroom? And a lot of times we forget the actual definition of challenging behaviors versus just the definition of an annoyance, which is a hot button.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to have your teachers kind of lay out all those hot buttons as well. It's super therapeutic. But just to say, is this a challenging behavior or is this a hot button? Because if you're just struggling to get along with a child or a hot button parent, probably not the best fit matchmaking wise to be a primary, you know, caregiver for that child.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I kind of use that philosophy when I'm placing teachers in rooms, because like you could have this amazing, amazing preschool teacher and put them in the infant room and they might do well and do amazing, but it is draining. They will go home and just be so exhausted. Kind of the same thing that you're saying is that when they, if they're given this child to be a primary caregiver to, but it just constantly, it's like a temperament thing. They're going to go home just feeling so drained every night rather than, you know, dealing with this other child who is a better match temperament wise. So I think it's super important to consider all those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which again, it speaks to, if this is an opportunity for your staff, like speaks to your leadership, right? Because a lot of times it's kind of like, we're just in this classroom and, you know, my goal and my job, you know, as a coach is, like, we need to empower our teachers to feel like they can say something and that they can ask questions. And when we have leaders who are like, yes, say all the things, it creates this culture of where everyone does their best and like essentially lives out their best. And that's what we want for these kids. And so, you know, teachers, we could complain about certain children all day long or the field or the pay and so on and so on. And it is a real issue, but being able to use your voice is so empowering. And that's what I think I go back to, that like loving the relationship piece of this, because yeah. when you have someone who comes in and supports you, has a good relationship with an owner or director, mm-hmm. it's a systems framework. It's that effective workforce. Mm-hmm. It's not just you top down saying you're doing primary caregiving and that's it. Yeah. It's let's have a conversation. Yeah. What are the challenges? What are the benefits? How is this going to work?
Yeah. I'm a firm believer that if I'm making a decision that affects somebody, they should be involved in it. I mean, safety concern or something, but yeah, I mean, that's down to who their co-teacher is, you know, a change that we're going to make in their room. I mean, yes. Teachers need to have that freedom to make some decisions for themselves or be at least involved in those decisions because it directly affects them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're living out that like effective workforce, right? And we've seen with studies that, you know, if it's top down and you're trying to make a change, typically what happens is it takes like, I don't know, say like 10 years for a change, for only like a small amount of mm-hmm. teachers to buy in, versus if you have more of this like leadership team or like approach to a whole program wide approach versus top down, it typically takes, you know, 3 to 4 years for like 85% of staff to just buy into the change, buy into different policies and procedures. And we don't think of childcare as like a systems shift, right? And it is, because yeah. I mean, you cannot make changes without having everyone's buy-in, families, absolutely. Staff, leaders, yeah. everything, and having a say, because I mean, we're just going to be continuing to live in crisis then.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I kind of like look at that a little bit backwards. So when I look at me in my daycare centers, I look at myself at the bottom, and I look at myself as I'm working for everybody above me. And the kids are at that point at the top on the pyramid. So I look at it as I'm working for them. So when I make a decision, such as like when parents were allowed back in the building, whether or not we're going to wear masks, parents were involved in that decision.
Yeah.
Staff was involved in that decision. To me, these are decisions that I should not be making on my own, because there are 100 people involved. So right. I'm here to kind of gather the information and look at what the majority is saying and then implement that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to do a shameless plug for the pyramid model. You would be a great candidate for it because a lot of what I have to essentially preach is this framework. And that's exactly what you're talking about. It's this program-wide implementation of change, not just you, right? Like you said, why people who, unfortunately, who are working in an area, whether it's corporate, childcare, wherever, where decisions are just being made for them, but it's about their work, you know, how can you expect that employee to come back and live like essentially their best lives, do their best in your environment?
Right.
The pyramid model is all about that, right? It's all yeah. about systems first.
It's on my radar. I want yeah. to get involved because you just started last week or earlier this month, right? You just started that up again, that class?
I did. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. It's just right now there's so much. I hired a new director, and so yep. I do want to do it. It's just right now is not the time.
Oh yeah, no. And I'm here, right? I'm a trainer. I'm a coach for it. And I just think like you get it, right? You understand that you're already doing it. And it's just when we can get people to, you know, kind of steer away from just like sending their staff to the required trainings and expecting change,
right.
Telling them what to do versus asking them, how do you feel about this? Mm-hmm. We will then start seeing the change, right? It's not all, you can't train away challenging behaviors, right? You can't train away, you know, certain things that like a staff's attitude, like we have to work together. And that's what the pyramid is. It's a framework of systems change.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think that change only is going to stick if it's motivated and stems from inside. You have yeah. to figure out what motivates that person, and they have to see the importance of it before they're going to want to change it.
Yeah. You know? So, right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yes.
This is all great stuff. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? Any programs that you want to talk about? Because this is hopefully teachers listening. So do you want to let them know about the YWCA and what you have to offer?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think, like, you know, we talked about so much, and I know if anyone is listening who's ever heard me talk, they know I can go on and on, but I just really wanted to, like, bring it back to kind of like resetting the tone, right? And this is really important right now. How many children were affected by the pandemic, but not only that, how many teachers were and adults. We have our own stuff going on. And so without these relationships and, like, solid environments that encompass schedule, routine, everything that has to do with an environment, they're just going to continue to live in crisis. So I'm here to support that. The YWCA, yeah, I work on a team of five specialists. So we have two specialists for Lake County, and then three specialists for Kane and DuPage. So you've got your two infant toddler specialists, you've got quality specialists who support Accelerate Illinois. I'm a trainer and huge advocate and coach for pyramid models. So I'm definitely, you know, if people are listening and want more information on that, I would love to connect them, not only just myself, but then the Pyramid Consortium, because it does take, it's a commitment to do this work. And then, yeah, the YWCA, I mean, we're here for trainings, we're here for credential support, we run CDA programs, so classes where, you know, teachers can get their CDA. I mean, that's kind of what the Early Childhood Services does, but please, you know, look at YWCAChicago.org for all of the rest of our teams and departments that are all across Lake and then Chicago, essentially, Metropolitan Chicago.
Okay. So I'll put that link in there. And then if there's any other links that you want to provide, I can put in the show notes, like if there's a link to for more information on the pyramid model, and anything else that you think teachers would benefit from seeing, I can, you can send me links and I can include them in the show notes.
Absolutely. Happy to do that. Yeah. Great.
All right. So let me ask you some fun questions to
close. Okay.
What's the funniest thing a child ever said to you?
Okay. So this was actually happened like Monday. I was out at an observation and I have pregnancy brain. So this is why I had to find one that just happened. So I'm out, I'm very pregnant. And this girl goes, this little girl, she's a 3-year-old. Ew, your belly is so big. And I was like, yes, I'm having a baby. Well, then she looked behind me at my rear and she's like, oh, you having a baby there too?
Oh my God.
And I just have a big butt. Like, I was like, no, nope, that's not a baby. That's my butt. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Kids
the
are
honesty, funny. Right?
That's great. Honesty. Oh my God. Okay. What is your favorite early childhood resource? It could be like a website, social media, a book, a person, anything.
Yeah. Okay. So I've got a couple, obviously the pyramid model. So the NCPMI website has everything that you could ever want to support children's social emotional development. It's free. People can download scripted stories, videos, like visuals. I love it.
Okay.
Rita Pearson's TED Talk, Every Child Deserves a Champion, speaks to the importance of relationships. And I'm going to go like way back and just talk about the guidelines and developmental standards. If we just kind of brought it back to the Illinois early learning guidelines and developmental standards, I think if teachers kind of took those and started implementing more of that, it would be less stress of like lesson planning for curriculums. You know, there's such a awesome tool and resource that we don't see a lot of teachers using, you know? So I think those are great.
And each classroom has a copy of that in a binder. Yeah. And I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not sure that all the teachers know it's there. I'm going to actually, that's going to be my mission for next week, is to make sure everybody understands that this is here and this is how you use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what is hard? Cause it's a huge book, right? And so if I had people who want to take on this project, like how can we make it easier to read? Mm-hmm. And that's been on my mind for a long time is how do we make some of these really heavy resources more friendly to our teachers?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to do that with the DCFS standards.
Oh, I can't get started on that.
Yeah. So, okay. Do you have any podcasts or books or blogs that you would recommend to teachers?
So this is actually, I'm very new to the whole podcast scene and blogs. Yes. And I might have to add that because I'm looking at my bookshelf here and I don't want to mess up the title, but essentially it's about like finding your why for coaching / teaching. So how can you go back to like where are you at as a teacher? And it's good. We use it as coaches, but I think it would be wonderful for teachers to read as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there was one more and I totally forgot. So don't let me forget to send you that.
I'll send you a follow-up email.
Okay. I would feel terrible if I'm like, I love what I do, yet I have no resources for these teachers. So
yes. That's funny. Okay. Can you think of an activity that teachers could use as like kind of a 911 activity, like in an infant toddler classroom, if everything is going crazy, what would you do to bring it all back in?
So stop turning the music up, right? Because that's going to dysregulate and increase the heart rate more.
Yeah.
Turn down the lights, blow some bubbles, maybe put on some really soft music, lower your voice. Just be with the children. As I mentioned today, I was in an observation and it was such a hard observation. It was a toddler classroom and one child cried and it just sparked every single child. This teacher, she did so wonderful. She just sat on the floor and she was like, let me see how wide I can get my arms and just like hug you guys, you know? And I saw the bubbles over there and I was going to tell her like, hey, grab the bubbles, mm-hmm. anything that calms, right? I think we think like if we're just increasing the music, it's going to make kids happy. But if they're dysregulated, it might make them more upset, right? So that's my two cents for that. 911, just bring it back to like relaxing, breathing, bubbles really help.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
My last question is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received, either personally or professionally? Mm.
Oh gosh, I should have looked at this outline before because I wish I had something profound. Okay. So I'm just going to tell you what I heard from a coach and like a mentor, and it's around children's behavior. And it really spoke to me because of kind of where we're at in this world right now. Our kids just need us, right? And so she said, listen, we have to offer a space where children can fall out. Fall out meaning like have their temper tantrums, have their aggressive behavior. And it's really hard because we don't know what kind of community and what kind of family life they're in. And so do you want your children to fall out essentially like into bad relationships, into the streets, at home where they're getting maybe punished in a certain way that we wouldn't want to see? Or do you want them to fall out in your care and teach them how to essentially regulate and teach them the tools? So that way, when they're met with this, they're not going down this trajectory of like continuing to be super dysregulated and have this like essentially not able to calm down, right? Not able to know and understand emotional literacy, things like that.
Yeah.
So when I heard her say that, it just blew my mind because I'm like, that is why we do what we do, right? Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that these children, wherever they're coming from, come into your care. And we're getting past this old way of like discipline. We're getting past this, like, let me take this away from you, give you a timeout, raise my voice. And we're getting to this new way of like teaching them the tools. So that way, when they're our age, they're in solid relationships. And that is probably the best thing I ever heard from this coach. And it just kind of stuck with me. Yeah. Like,
I completely agree with that. That one small thing I think could change so many lives for these kids because, I mean, like if you read my mission statement for lifelong learners, one of the things in there is that I look at some adults and some teenagers and I think, what happened in the first 5 years of life? Something mm-hmm. happened. They did not get what they needed somewhere. And that's why they're violent, they're suicidal, they're stealing. Yeah. Like, I feel like that, what you just said, could just change so many of these kids' lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you bring up a really good point. Bruce Perry and Oprah did a 60-minute it was on TV, 60 minutes. And they talked about asking children, like, what happened versus what's wrong? Like, what's wrong with you is so shameful. And what happened to you is like, tell me how I can help you. Yeah. Right. And so yes. And like, I think about us, like we are, whether or not you like teachers agree, like we have this like servant attitude, like we're here to help our kids. Mm-hmm. And like you said, because once they're out of your program, you have set that lens of expectation of what good adult children relationships or teacher student relationships look like.
Yeah.
And if they go into kindergarten, first, second grade, and they don't have like this great interaction, they at least have this steady foundation of what we've done in the early childhood field.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. No. I always love talking to you. So thank you. And I really think that you offered so much to our teachers on this podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to come back again. I hope it was helpful.
Careful what you say.
I can come back. I'm happy to. Awesome. Give me all the topics and I'll absolutely.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you so much for making us a part of your day. I hope you found value in today's content. New episodes drop the first and third Mondays of the month. Don't forget to like us and subscribe. We love feedback, so tell us what you want to learn about. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please contact us at lifelonglearners212@gmail.com. In the meantime, go out and be the difference.